Hello, and welcome to Writers Talking TV, brought to you by the Writers Guild of Canada. I'm Jill Golic, and I am losing my voice tonight. We just wrapped up a great evening of talk about web series, which you're going to hear in just a minute. But before we start, I just wanted to tell you that Canada is really emerging as a leader in the web series industry. We have a ton of web series being made in this country every month, and Toronto is particularly a hotbed of web series, and there's a great web series community here, many of whom came out to listen to tonight's talk. We did most of our talking to three web series creators who are good friends of mine: Scott Albert, Regan Latimer, and Jason Lieber. Right in, and first I want to talk to you, Scott, and tell us about what shows you've created and why you got into this in the first place.
Well, I come from a sketch comedy background. I sort of cut my teeth in the improv and sketch comedy scene, and that's very much a spirit of like, oh, we have this idea, let's go do it, and then you go do it. And I also wanted to get into television, which is very much not that spirit. It's very much a spirit of, you know, let's think about it and develop it and, you know, apply for funding and get financing. And so around, 2003, 2004, this thing called YouTube popped up. And me and my buddy Christopher Guest, who's my partner, but not, he's not like Christopher Guest, but his name is Christopher Guest. He's my business partner. And we were like, you could do like a TV show on the YouTube. And so we started just making stuff, and it turned out it was really hard, but it was too awesome and rewarding to stop. So we have done something like 6 different series, depending how you count. The most recent 2 we're going to look at tonight, one was Tights and Fights Ashes, that I co-show run with Christopher and our other business partner, Courtney Wolfson. And then Job Review the Vampire, which I wrote, and then 3 of us produced through our company, Gopher X.
Can we start by taking a look at? Let's start and watch a little bit of video from Scott, and then we'll come back and find out what his best piece of advice is for us.
It's going to be giant on this screen. So I guess just very quickly, the first one will be an episode from Tights and Fights Ashes, and it'll be the villain who just recently lost his best friend, Barry the Nuclear Missile. And the next one will be the first episode of the unreleased Job Review with a Vampire.
Okay, oh, that was great, Scott. I haven't seen that before. I guess it's not released.
No, it's not released yet, but we actually shot it before we did Tights and Fights. But then we were so busy doing 183 episodes of Tights and Fights that we haven't had time to put it up and tell people about it.
Okay, so get your rest. But before you do that, tell us what's your best piece of advice for web creators.
I have one super quick general piece of advice and then another piece of advice. So the super quick one is, if you want to do it, just do it. There's nothing stopping you. If you, you know, go out and shoot it on your phone, you know, don't let anyone tell you that you can't. Do it. Don't wait for cameras. Don't wait for lighting. Don't wait for, you know, to figure out the business end. Just go out and do it, because everyone learns as they go. But my other piece of advice is sort of the opposite. If you really want to make a career out of it, if you really want to make a business and a career out of it, as opposed to just a creative outlet and put it online, then you really should spend time thinking about your priorities of what you want out of it. You know, you can either get views online, or you can make money, or you can win awards. And it's possible to do all 3, but there's only so many hours in the day. That's going to be a recurring theme, I'm sure, of the evening. And so it really helps to know, like, which of those 3 is, like, the main one that you're going after.
Jason, do you agree?
Well, I gave up sleep 4 years ago. And I'm about to become a dad, so no problem. No, you don't need time. Just do it all.
But do you agree that you have to set your priority? That there are 3 things to.
I misunderstood your question. All joking aside, Yes, I do actually quite agree. Because, you do have to allot your attention to certain details. And if it means getting views, then that means you're focusing on building an audience, right? And that is a ton of effort, as I know we've all experienced. The other option is getting awards, and that is actually very expensive because you have to submit to all these festivals and events and ceremonies and whatnot.
And it's time-consuming.
And that is also time-consuming. And, you know, and then there's the possibility of that maybe, you know, we might have to go to these festivals that maybe wherever, and that's more time, more money. And I'm blanking the third.
Money.
Well, and yes, and do you want to make money? That is also a huge amount of time because then it's a question of designing yourself a monetization strategy, be it, you know, merchandise or, you know, putting up a paywall, whatever. There's a million different ways you can make money, but that's going to take a lot of time and effort as well. And so you kind of, if you're lucky, you'll get two of the three. I've actually made luck with that. I've gotten two out of the three, but not money. That's
okay. That answers the two. Okay, so Regan, what about you? Did you set your sights on one of the three to start, or all of them, or what were your expectations?
When I started, I didn't set my sights on anything. I didn't know what I was doing. I admit it fully. I had no idea what I was getting.
Neither did I.
But that's fair. Neither did any of us actually.
How did you start?
So BJ Fletcher Private Eye specifically started because there was a contest on a website that I wanted to enter, and it was to find the next great lesbian web series. And I wanted to do a project with my friend Lindy, who is BJ Fletcher Private Eye. So we just got together and submitted, and the contest was to submit three, and if you win, you had to do a total of 10. So we just submitted and thought, well, that's great. And then we won, and then we had to sit down and be like, oh, now we have to do 10. So we put in the effort and did season one, then season two, and then 2 years later, season three.
So how long were you working on the project?
Since the end of 2007. And wow. I just today finished the outtake reel for season three, so that's almost 6 years.
Wow. And what are you doing with the outtake reel? Is that going on the web, or are you...
Yeah, it's going everywhere.
It's going everywhere. But mm-hmm. Are you going to do DVDs, or...?
So... Your idea, actually, Jill, of the USB key has intrigued me.
Uh-huh, okay.
Because I was planning on doing the whole series, putting it out on DVD, but now I'm looking into other ideas that weren't around when we finished season... Between season two and season three, there was a really big break because we couldn't keep going on the lack of money we had doing that. So we waited. We had a development deal with a producer to bring it to television, which didn't... work the way I wanted it to. We definitely had interest, but that's the one thing that I learned really quick. The difference between the web and television is the amount of control you have and the amount of control you're going to give up if you go to TV. Maybe not. Maybe you'll have lots of control on TV. My experience was that going to TV, you have to give up some control. So,
and everyone's interested until it's time to part with some money.
Exactly. So...
Okay, so on BJ Fletcher, you wrote, you directed.
Yes.
Did you do all the post yourself?
Yes, I did everything but act because I don't act.
You shot it too, didn't you, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Did everything.
And so, and did you know when you started out, like, how to code things for to upload them to YouTube? Or?
Well, when we started in 2008 was when we were putting up our first episodes. Video was still very much in its infancy on the web. That was one of the things this website with the contest was trying to do, was to get content, video content for their site. And this was one of the ways they did it. So all of that stuff I just learned as I went.
Okay. And when did you, build a website? How soon did you build a website? And how many episodes in the first season?
So season one and season two were 10 episodes each. Season three was 5. Exactly. For season one, I built the website myself, which was, again, just learning as I went along. And then season two, I had my producer friend in England come on board, who took over all of the website stuff, which was amazing because that is not my forte. Yeah.
And when you started, how long were the episodes? How long were your first episodes?
So when we started out, they were averaging... 6-7 minutes. Our longest, I think, was 8 or 9 in the first season.
That's a long for beginning.
Little did I know that indeed that was long. But then the fan base that we got, and I'm sure you have all found this as well, is longer episodes. We want longer episodes. So season 2 grew to like 12, 13 minutes each. And then season 3, they were like 15 to 20 minutes each.
So when you say there were 5, that was the same amount of content.
Yes.
Jason, how long were yours to start, and how long are they going to be in season 3?
They vary widely. In my first season, I started shortly after Regan did, and that was at a time when there were all these rules about how long episodes are supposed to be, and there was this rule that I heard that a web series episode has to be between 3 and 5 minutes. If it's any more than 5 minutes, people won't even press play because they'll see it's more than that. Oh, I'm not going to watch it. And my first episode was 6 minutes, and I was terrified that people wouldn't watch it. And I uploaded it, and of course the overwhelming feedback was, it's so short, why is it so short? I'm like, uh-oh, because the next episode is 3 minutes long. They're going to be really pissed. So I combined a whole bunch of episodes to make them longer, and then we ended up shooting more. Remember episode 4 we shot at the end, because we were like, oh, we need more. And so we just started shooting more to make more content because I realized I was short. So the average, I think, in my first season was probably 8 minutes. And then my second season, I think the average is 10 minutes. And what I foresee for season 3, it'll probably be a bit shorter this time around. But I'll be doing more episodes. I like shorter. It's just what I like. And the audience can... they'll just have to wait until next week.
That's not a very good lead into my next question.
I might also add to that. Back in 2008, when we were posting episodes, there was a limit of how much time you could upload. So that absolutely played a part.
Which there was no longer exists.
No longer exists, yeah.
Yeah, but you were allowed to upload 100 megs to YouTube, exactly. And so you either had to have really, really crappy quality or short.
Exactly.
But to answer Jill's question that she was going to ask, is that the episodes vary widely, and I ultimately don't care how long an episode is. I let the story dictate how long it'll be. Is that where you were going to go with that?
No, actually, but that's really important. So let's just talk. We'll come back. We'll circle back to see BJ Fletcher in a minute, but let's just talk about story on the web a little bit. Like, are there any rules that you guys think of when it comes to story? Anything about how many episodes, program length, anything like that?
I don't think there's any rules. I think that the great thing about doing stuff for web series is that there's no right or wrong answers. You can do whatever you want to do. There's an audience for it. You know, you just have to make it. I think the key is that if you're going to make something an episode, it's got to be good as an episode.
Yep.
Some people will see it as like one storyline, a very serialized thing, but they'll kind of forget that someone who's watching episode 3 isn't necessarily sticking around for episode 12 that's going to get released how many months later. But in terms of like format or length or time, there's no right or wrong. Although Jabri with the Vampire, each episode is exactly 7 minutes because we have sold stuff to broadcast in the past. And if you're selling to broadcast, it really helps to have similar lengths. And if you do 7-minute ones, they can program 3.5-hour block. So that was our plan there. But if you're just doing stuff for online, just do whatever you want.
Yeah, let the story dictate. That is my philosophy. One of the episodes if we have time to later today, it's only 3 minutes long, and a lot of people say it's the most emotional and the most, you know, impactful episode, and it's 2 shots, and it's 3 minutes long, and I'm really proud of that one. And then my longest one is arguably 25 minutes long. It's actually, I ended up splitting it into 2 parts just because I felt like doing it that way. And I was worried that would be too long, and everyone's saying, oh, it's the most beautiful, most impactful episode, and all that kind of stuff. You get a lot of hyperbole in the comments, of course. But
Regan, thoughts on story length episodes?
My only thought on that is, especially on the web, where there is in fact no rules really of what you have to do, is just make it a good story. If it's a good story, you can do however long you want.
So one thing that Davin said, I can't think of Davin's last name.
Langland.
Langland. He once pointed out a great thought. This more pertains to comedy, but his logic in terms of length is he said it should be, if it's a joke, then the episode should be no longer than the person standing behind you looking over your shoulders willing to stand there and watch it. I kind of like that. I think there's some truth to that.
So do you think that if it's dramatic, it can go longer, and comedy has got to be quicker, or do you think it matters?
I don't want to use that rule either. It's because, you know what, if it's good drama and the person's willing to stand over your shoulder for 15 minutes, then it's 15 minutes.
So no rules. Okay.
Yeah.
So then, how can you tell what makes a good concept for the web? Is there a difference? Like I think sort of we tend to think that there are certain stories that work best on film and certain stories that work best on TV. Like TV, you want a story engine that can keep generating story for, 65 or more episodes. For film, we think big themes. Is there a rule of thumb on the web at all?
I don't think so.
No.
I think,
except for being serial, perhaps.
Serial.
When I thought of the idea for Out With Dad, I was sitting on a subway one day, and just the idea of a girl coming out to her dad seemed charming to me. And I thought, okay, but this feels serial. Like, I was thinking of these little, mini stories. And I thought, okay, well, so it's serial, so that means it's not a film. And then I thought, okay, well, then that leaves television, because it was the only two options, right? And then I realized, oh, if I do television, that means I have to pitch to people. I have to go knock on doors and ask for permission to make it. And then I was like, well, that seems like way too much work. I'll just do it myself. And way too much work. Yeah. But I didn't ask anyone permission to do it, which goes back to the first thing Scott said. I just did it.
I think, it's so, if you want to, once again, if you want to do it as a career and as a business or whatever, it's so much work that, the number one thing should be to just love it. And if you're thinking about, is it going to work? Is it not going to work? If that's what you're thinking, come up with an idea that you love more where those questions are irrelevant and you're just like, yes, this is what I want to spend, because best case scenario, if something's successful, best case scenario, you're going to be doing that every day for the next 10 years. So it's got to be just whatever you love most is what's going to work best, okay. Especially on the web, I think more so than other mediums.
Well, because it takes more out of you as the person, the creative force behind it.
It's more direct. It's more direct with the audience.
Okay.
I would also just say, as far as should an idea be serialized, what I have found does not necessarily work for the web is taking, you've written a full-length movie, making it and dividing it up into episodes does not necessarily work for the web. Like with Fletcher, I wrote it in individual episodes, and every episode is a cliffhanger ending, which when you write a movie, there's an overall arc that doesn't necessarily fit into episodic format.
Yeah, each B.J. Fletcher has a beginning, middle, and an end.
Right.
So let's talk about the episode. So I also do a detective show on the web. Mine is one long story each season. Is yours one mystery each season? Or is it episodic
season
mysteries?
3 was one case because it was only 5 episodes. And I wanted to focus on other things to wrap up the story because season 3 was the last season. Seasons 1 and 2, I think, each had 3 cases that spanned kind of 3.5 episodes type thing. But the difference with Ruby Sky and Fletcher is the cases in Fletcher. One of the comments and feedback that we got frequently was, these cases aren't very complex. It's like, no, they're not, because Fletcher, as you will see, Fletcher is an idiot. She'd never be able to solve a real case. Whereas Ruby Sky is quite intelligent and can actually solve things. But
All right, so do you want to set up an episode for us and we'll take a look what we've got?
So we are going to see episode 3.1, which is the first episode of season 3, which there's a previously beforehand, which will sort of catch you up on what happened in seasons 1 and 2. But there's an overall romantic arc that you will see come into play, and they get their case that lasts for the rest of season 3, and comedy and drama ensues.
So we really saw how the cliffhanger worked, too, in that, both at the beginning, like we saw the recap of the cliffhanger from last time, which was a really effective one, the napkin. I love that.
Yeah, and the great thing about that was it was a cliffhanger for 2 years.
And so did your audience, like, did you have the sense that your audience stuck around and was waiting for you when you came back?
That was the most amazing thing. They totally were there, because for our third season, we did crowdfunding, and I thought, oh, God, does anyone remember us? And they totally did, which was amazing. Mind you, during that 2 years, I still put out some new content. It was behind-the-scenes stuff, that sort of thing, and always kept the Twitter and Facebook going, so you have to kind of cultivate it. But, yeah, they stuck around, so that was great.
That's amazing. Okay, so advice?
Just to kind of reiterate what Scott was hitting on.
You can have two.
Yes, you did. Just be sure that if you're going to do a web series, that you are absolutely in love with the idea that you want to do. And I say that because, one, the web is a great creative space where you can do whatever you want to do. And two, as we've sort of touched on already, it is the most insane amount of work that you will have to put into it. And it's 24 hours and it's 7 days a week. It's keeping the Twitter going and keeping the Facebook going and engaging with your fans on top of making the series and looking for money and all of these things. So really love the idea, because otherwise you're going to regret putting in that much effort to make it.
Okay, that's good advice. Okay, so let's, you know, we talked a little bit about writing. I mean, I'm just, you know, I'm easing into the difficult space, but let's stay in the part we still understand, and let's talk about production, because so you guys both direct and shoot your own shows. There's a lot of production value in BJ Fletcher. I mean, you got the whole roller rink and all those girls there and everything. Like, what do you think when you're making for the web? Do you think it has to be like lower production values or a smaller show? How big do you go?
I think it all depends on what you have available to you. When I was writing season 3, I don't know why Roller Girls popped in my head, but they did. So before actually writing it, because they're awesome, before I actually wrote it into the script, I contacted the GTA Roller Girls and said, would you be interested at all in us coming and filming at one of your practices? And they were all over it and supportive. So then I wrote it in. But, you know, use whatever you have available to you to make it the highest production value that you absolutely can.
Jason, on production value?
Yeah, I mean, when, you know, what I was saying, like sitting on that subway that fateful day, and I thought, you know, I could just do it myself. And it's because, like, my bread and butter is corporate videos. Same with Regan, actually. And so, like, I already have cameras, I already have lights, I've got some sound gear, and I've got, you know, I knew what people I could tap into, and actors are, like, totally easy to find. Sorry, guys. My cast. No, I knew what I could get my hands on. And, you know, the concept I had, you know, I didn't need roller derby. I didn't need a lot of things. It's funny what things end up being really hard to find. Like, you know, it's a school. My story is set in high school. And to shoot in a high school, that's ridiculously impossible to find, you know, like just to have those iconic lockers, like find a building with lockers that'll let you in there without lots of red tape.
And with gay girls.
Well, yeah. So, I mean,
I like how you whispered it.
Yeah. That makes it harder, doesn't it?
No. I mean, like, cause like, I talked to a lot of like the Toronto, schools about seeing if they would let us film there, and they're exceedingly receptive. And like the principals and the teachers I talked to, they were all like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. You can come in. And, you know, sometimes it's like, oh, you could do a thing on filmmaking, talk to our classes. I'm like, you know, I love, teaching. So I'm like all over that. Sure thing. And then they'd say, okay, you just got to talk to this department, and they're going to talk about permits and things that you don't understand because you're new at this, and red tape and money for all this crazy stuff. The Catholic school board, no, they didn't want to touch us. So, but private schools, actually, similarly, they weren't all that interested either because, well, for them, it's a business. So they just want to talk about money. So in the end, what I did was one of my crew persons, he was still a student at Ryerson, Rye High, And he just said, "Oh, this is my student film," and we just basically snuck in. And I don't like being that way, but you know, incidentally, I'm doing that again for season 3.
Okay.
Like they know, but you know, it's like I hate being all incognito about it at the same time, you know.
So I mean, you've done a tremendous and you too. You've done a tremendous amount on very low budgets. Like, how do you? I mean, are there strategies? Do you try and keep it? You know, do you think about that at scripting stage? You manage the budget from the script and the location.
But you know what else though? It's you know, if you have the enthusiasm to get this done, that enthusiasm can be very infectious. And so, like I said, if it wasn't for the red tape, a high school would have been easy because, you know, I go in there and they see how passionate and obsessed I am with the project and how I feel like it's going to change the world and you know, all this kind of stuff. Then they, you know, then other people will get just as passionate and they'll want to help out just as much. And so in a lot of ways, there's so much you can get, you know, I mean, take a look at Pete Winning and the Pirates. This is another web series that I co-directed, and the co-director Mike Donis is here. Talk about high production. There's this Mike. He stars as Pete Winning, and he wrote a post-apocalyptic pirate swashbuckling adventure with pirates with lasers. Okay, that's enough you need to know. And the production value looks insanely high. And I mean, there were a lot of costs associated with it because, like, you know, we're out on the water filming on boats and fuel.
How was the insurance?
Well, I have insurance through my corporate company, so. Whatever I pay a year, you know. So like we were able to ask for, like, we got boats donated, the wardrobe, like we kept it pretty low. I mean, you know, we got a lot out of using very little, and like really, like, you know, on Out with Dad, the most expensive part of seasons 1 and 2 was the catering. And I mean, like, you know, like 90% of the budget was food. And
okay, so where did that money come from?
For seasons 1 and 2, it came out of my pocket.
Regan, you
Season 1 came out of my pocket. Season 2, we fundraised for the old-fashioned way. We actually had a fundraiser because crowdfunding wasn't really around yet. And then Season 3, we crowdfunded for that.
Actually, we did a fundraiser old-fashioned way for The Gate, actually. Because we knew we could shoot. We shot 36 episodes in 2 days, and we knew that we needed enough money for 2 days of catering.
Uh-huh. Okay, and Scott? You got money.
Oh, yeah. Well, for Tights and Fights Ashes, we got funded by the Independent Production Fund in their first year of their web series fund, which was very exciting. All the other shows that we've done have just really been sort of out of pocket, and we've been able to, like, break even on them.
Can you just talk a little bit about the budgeting for the Independent Production Fund? Did you get money from any other source?
No. So what we did is that the Independent Production Fund will fund a certain percentage of your budget. And what we did is we topped that up we deferred our own fees. So there was whatever percentage was left that we had to finance, we just said, oh, well, we won't pay ourselves that much. And at the time...
Were you able to pay yourselves, though?
Yeah, we paid ourselves, not really what we should have. We expected it, originally it was going to be like 6 months or 7 months or something, but then there was just so much content that was spooling out that we sort of hit log jams, ended up being 2 years of pretty much constant work on it. So the paying ourselves was not where the money went into.
Are there people who are applying to the Independent Production Fund right now? Okay. So, okay. So we'll get to your questions in a minute. I bet you have some. Well, good luck, everybody. We'll be watching your trailers. And if you don't know, Carrie, who's over here, is the owner of The Hat, has a website in which she's got as many pilots as she can find. So if your pilot isn't there, come up to her afterwards and tell her about it, because she'll post it and we'll be able to find them all and watch them all and support your efforts, which is probably a good time to mention the community.
Let's do that. I will do that. So a while back, was it 2 years ago now? Yeah, so 2 years ago, Tina Cisa Ward, who is the creator of Anyone But Me and the director and co-writer, I think,
which is a web series coming out of the States.
That's right. It's done in New York. And I was a fan of the show, and I noticed her tweeting that she was going to be in Toronto one day, and I was going to go to the event that she was at. And then I discovered that the event was like, you know, $600 or $700 or $800 to get in, which is roughly the first season budget. So I was like, all right, I'm not going to that. So I tweeted my dismay, and then she said, well, let's get together anyway. You know, we kind of knew each other. And so I said, all right, let's get together. And then Regan noticed this conversation, so she chimed in. And then so did Renee Olbert. Is that how you pronounce her name? So basically all these Toronto makers of lesbian-themed web series got together in a pub, and we just started talking and sharing. And we discovered, you know, how much we could learn from each other. It was just such a great learning experience. And then Scott kind of...
I saw that Jason had tweeted that they were getting together. And I tweeted and I said, can I come?
And I said, no, you're not
Jason
a lesbian.
Said, no.
but I thought that he was making a good point. Like, why lock it into one genre or theme or whatever? Let's take it a step further. So in the new year, it was in February, I remember, we did a Facebook event and saw how many people were interested. And we all met at a pub. And I think like 20 or 30 people showed up. And that night, I learned so much from people, and I know that other people were learning tons. Regan couldn't make it. She actually never makes it. This is a funny thing.
I went to the last
one. You went to the last one, and you were at the first one.
But that's because you're not producing a web show anymore. You have time.
Yeah. So these things, they were basically bi-monthly, these meetups were happening, and there's just so much camaraderie coming out of it. Because, you know, in my experience in film school, like I know... The classes that graduated before mine and after mine, there was a lot of stress and tension, and no one was cooperating because everyone just wanted their film to be the best. But my year, for some reason, like there were 18, we had 18 films completed in my final year, and they were all really good. And it's because everyone was in it together, everyone was trying to help each other, everyone wanted everyone else's film to be the best. I loved that attitude. And in fact, one of the reasons why I chose to make Up With Dad as a web series and not television is I saw that angry, cutthroat, I have to be the best, I have to have Thursday night at 8 o'clock time slot attitude. I'm like, I just don't want to deal with that kind of energy. Like, you know, let's do this happy, fun way. And now I'm trying to encourage, I thought, you know, I saw this as an opportunity to set the tone of like a positive attitude where we all can be fans of each other, because the beautiful thing about the internet is that, you know, we aren't competing for Thursday night at 8 o'clock. You can love Tights and Fights and BJ Fletcher equally. Or a better example might be BJ Fletcher and Ruby Sky. They're both detective shows. They're different, but they're both detective shows. And you can be the biggest detective fan in the world, and they can still both be your favorite because it's the internet. And I love that. So why should we compete with one another? Let's help out. And so cross-pollination started happening, and, you know, you started seeing actors show up in other shows and you know, all sorts of stuff. Yeah, like Robert Nolan is in everything these days. Yeah, see, everyone knows. So that's kind of what going. And then there's the Facebook group, too, that we started, and that also is just a wealth of information. Like, you ask a question.
Which is called?
Yeah, so if you search for the Toronto Web Series Community... It shows up in your Facebook search, and someone will eventually click add. You have to ask to join, but someone will click add and then introduce yourself. Like, you know, introduce yourself. Say like, hi, I heard about this at this event, and here's the thing I'm working on, because we all want to know. Like, we all want, I want to be a fan of every show if I can, and learn from each other and see what's out there. And like I said, you ask a question, it gets answered so often.
What questions have you guys asked on that feed?
Well, sometimes it's things like, where's a good place to get T-shirts printed, you know, because you need that done. Or does someone have my favorite question once was someone saying they were doing a thing and they needed a live goat and a chicken. And they're hoping to get a chicken and a goat. Oh, and also, if we could, a sound person, too. I think he's still looking for a sound person. Oh, he did. Oh, he found a sound person. He got a goat and a chicken in no time, though. That's.
Yeah. I asked recently how to hang up my banner at Comic-Con, and I got serious answers, and not only that, but Scott came and hung it up for me.
I do that. For me, I asked, what is the point of Tumblr? That's what I asked.
Did you get an answer?
I got tons of answers, yes.
Well, I got to see that thread, because I need to read that.
Mm-hmm. Tumblr confuses me. We're really close, really close to 800.
798 members. So you could easily, right now, get on your phone and be number 800.
Yeah. 800 gets a free T-shirt.
Partially through the meetups and the Facebook group, which people from all over the world are really active on, even though it says Toronto.
It says Toronto in there, but there are people literally around the globe involved in it.
And partially because of the IPF, which is the only place in the world you can go and get funding like that for web series. Toronto right now is the place to make web series worldwide.
I agree. When I was in Marseille this past October, I was Dad was an official selection at the Marseille Web Fest, as was there were 22 series in all.
Was it Clutch?
Yeah, well, there were six from Canada in this festival. There were no other country that had more than two, I think, except from France there were three, but six were from Canada, and three of them were from Toronto. It was Clutch and Guidestones from Toronto, and Hitman 101 from out west, which I'm a huge fan of, and what else? Hitman 101.
Okay, while you're thinking about that, Jason, can you, you've told us a little bit about the genesis of Out With Dad. What else can you tell us about the show? It's been winning, you focus on audience, but you've won a lot of awards lately. You just won, what did you just win in New York? The Indie Soap Awards.
At the Independent Soap Awards, Out With Dad was nominated for and won Best Drama.
Very nice. Excited. Yay.
And
deservedly so.
Thank you. And actually, one of our actresses, she also won Best Breakthrough Performance. And we were nominated for 9 awards, and that was really amazing. I mean, we've been very successful in the awards world. Granted, mostly in the awards where the submission fee is low. by the way, you should know about We Love Soaps, the Independent Soap Awards. We Love Soaps is sort of an online. Their focus is on daytime soaps, but of course those are dwindling away into the ether, and a lot of the creators and the actors of those shows are drifting over to the web, and so their attention has come to the web, and so now their focus a lot is on independent soaps how they look up at us, and but their submission fee is $0, but there's no like comp tickets to get in. Like you pay if you're nominated, which I respect that business model because us indie people, like we don't have the finances to submit to all these expensive things. Like I've done it, we submitted to the Webbies 1 year and we were nominated, which was amazing. But that was $400. And I don't know if that was money well spent, as great as it felt. And like, I get to say for the rest of my life, I'm a Webby nominee. I also get to say I'm a Canadian Screen Awards nominee. We were Out With Dad was nominated in the first Canadian Screen Awards and in the digital category, and I'm really, really proud of that.
That was also expensive.
That was was the most money I've ever spent on submitting to something, but I do say that was absolutely well worth it because of the people that I met through all the surrounding activities, and so that was a wonderful experience, and I may do that again. But I also, you see, my third season, you see, we have this wonderful supportive audience. And at the end of every episode of Out With Dad, which you'll see in the end credits, right before we get to the credits, I always say, please support Out With Dad. Please go to outwithdad.com/contribute. And people have just, ever since the first day, in fact, the night we uploaded our first episode, I remember waking up the next morning, and there was a $20 donation in our PayPal account from some girl in Hong Kong. And then someone donated $10, and then one day someone donated $500, and like it's crazy. So we've incurred this huge amount of money, well, huge compared to what I'm used to using, I should say, and so we're able to fund our third season production, not post-production. We haven't raised money for that yet.
Well, maybe when we look in Carrie's hat, we'll have a day of editing. We sometimes, when we're talking about what we do in this web community, we talk about audience focus. Mm-hmm. And you know, what does that mean to you? I mean, Regan, let's start with you. What does that mean to you, audience focus?
The audience is the most important thing, because without them, you're just putting videos up on YouTube. And the engagement is the most important thing. And one of the things that I find in society today is people like to be able to connect with you. And so audience engagement is, for web series, one of the most important things, because essentially down the road, these are the people you're going to tap for cash. So treat them well.
Scott? Well, the comparison I like to make is that in Canada, film and television is very deal-driven. And so the work of getting something financed and made is to sort of engage with the ways that the money comes. And the actual audience is not really a big factor in what gets made and why it gets made. But in web series, you know, to me, the audience is the most important thing. And the goal should be, like you were saying, to make your money off of the audience. So there's such a thing as like branded web series, which is fine. I'm not saying people shouldn't do it, but to me, it's not the core joy of what web series is. The core joy of web series is not, you know, sort of serving a corporate master and doing what they want to do in order to put money in your pocket. It's making a story that deeply connects with people, and then you can do your monetization strategy should come from the love of your audience.
Okay, well, now, Jason, let's talk about your audience.
What do you want to know about my audience?
Well, I mean, you've done two seasons. We're getting ready for season three. What are you doing to keep them happy right now?
Well, I mean, yeah. So we have a very enthusiastic audience. In some ways, it feels effortless because they are engaging us, and by us, I mean Out With Dad, and by that, I mean me. No, but our cast too, because I mean they have their Facebook fan pages and stuff like that, and I would recommend that to all actors, even if you don't think it's just a little web series, it's not going to blow up. Set up a fan page right away, so that you can communicate to the audience that way. So the audience is engaged by the story, because one of the things about the story is that it's a story that you're not going to likely see on television. So it's a girl about, you know, the lead character is a girl who is struggling with her sexuality and kind of basically comes out to herself and eventually to Dad. And so that's not something you see on TV very much. And when you do see it, it's often cliched. And also, you never see from the parents' perspective either. So I'm also telling this from the dad's perspective. So this is something that you can't see anywhere else. And so when people are in the same situation as my characters, they're going online and they're Googling and they're looking for information on maybe how to come out, or they encountered homophobia and they're, you know, so these are the keywords that they're looking for, right? And fortunately, I can't say I've done it by design. I've kind of luckily just happened to do it, but the language you choose when you're describing your episodes and you're tagging and all this kind of stuff, choose your language carefully, because you know, it's like what might people be looking for, and you want them to find your show. So if someone is saying, "How do I come out?" Out With Dad might pop up, and then they'll watch it and they'll say, oh, "This is me! Like I was in that exact situation." Then they feel so connected, and then they go back and they watch every single episode. And then you know, when they're feeling down, they'll go watch them all over again. Like every now and then you get a comment, like one happened just this weekend, where it's like, I just watched every episode again, you know, tonight, and it's past midnight, and now I'm going to watch three more episodes, and why are you doing this to me? When is season three? Some of my cast is here, and we're constantly being asked that question, when is season three? So like we have them hooked. But in terms of other things to do between seasons, I mean, I keep them engaged by, you know, telling, you know, interesting facts or just, you know, photos from the set or whatever. And I know you've done a lot of that. But then recently, to help motivate, to help actually progress the story a little bit between seasons 2 and 3, because 1 and 2 kind of happened all very tightly in one go, is we've been doing these video diaries. And so Rose, the main character, she's recording these video diaries. They're not vlogs, because she's way too shy. We'd never upload something like this online. So it's just a video diary that we are privy to. And that's been really capturing a lot of people, because we've been able to, because they're shorter and easier to shoot, because it's literally just Kate and I in a room recording, we can kind of respond to some current events. So when Kathleen Wynne became our first female premier, Rose was all excited, and that she's an out woman as well. So Rose was kind of getting some inspiration from her that's maybe okay to be brave. And then with this terrible story that happened in Windsor with an LGBT student that was being bullied by her Catholic school teacher, we got to respond to that right away. And so it was that was really fun.
That's
and that's
very cool.
Really, and then at the end of each episode, each one of these diaries, we literally to the camera ask the audience a question. And I can't tell you how amazing that is, because we ask the question. It's like, what do you do? I can't think of one.
Who inspires you?
Yeah, who inspires you? That was the one. Who inspires you? And we're getting all these responses, and people are explaining. Ellen DeGeneres has been said 1,000 times, but that's a really fun way to engage the audience, and I get to do some exposition at the same time.
All right. So why don't you set up the next episode, the episode of Out With Dad,
yes.
And then we'll watch it, and then we'll come back and talk about the hard stuff, like how you get an audience.
Okay, great. Yeah, so what I've decided to show tonight is this is the premiere episode of our second season, and the first season was mostly about Rose struggling with coming to terms with her sexuality herself. Meanwhile, Dad, who suspects that Rose might be gay, he's been struggling with how do I talk to her about this, and we left it on a cliffhanger. She didn't come out yet, and she was, in fact, the last moment was her on her bed practicing coming out with her dad, and she just felt stupid because practicing doesn't help.
Okay, so
let's do it.
So, I turned on my phone while we were watching, just snuck a little peek at the time. It's already 9:00. I can't believe how much time we've already taken. So I just want to open up the floor to questions if anyone has any, and we'll just keep talking if you don't at the moment, but if you do, raise your hand. Okay, well, great. Ah, yes, from the middle, and we'll repeat the question when you say it. August and the Underworld. In the Underworld. Will we find that on YouTube? Okay.
It's awesome.
Ah, puppets. Congratulations. Okay, so Ben's question is about the social media. He mentions a lot of the different social media sites and feeds, and he wants to know which ones to use and which ones to avoid. Do you guys have strategies?
I avoid doing too many.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, if you do them all, you're going to be spending all of your time updating them all. For me, Twitter and Facebook was the best way to reach our fans, and I have found that mostly everyone is either on one or the other or both. If you want to do other ones as well, you can, but as I said, it's very time-consuming to update those.
I've tried a couple others too, and I just find, and I bet you the answer will be different for every web series though, because for instance, Twitter, a lot of the people that are on Twitter are older than people that are on Facebook, and people that are on Tumblr, I think, are younger still.
I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of your audience, Jason, isn't on Tumblr.
Yeah, and actually, I simply never did Tumblr just because I didn't have one personally myself, so I didn't really know what to do. But that before season three premieres, I absolutely am going to have a Tumblr account because from the demographics I know of, my audience, I was expecting it would be like adult parents watching and younger, mostly girls watching. It is younger, mostly girls watching, but and not so much the older crowd. We also have a lot of people that are like, oh, I wish this was out there when I was coming out, you know, 20 years ago, things like that kind of audience too. But from what I gather, Tumblr is like totally right for my dad. I just haven't done it yet. Yeah, one of my characters has a Tumblr account that my wife is maintaining for us, and it just, you know, we were spreading ourselves too thin, so she doesn't Tumblr very much anymore.
But that's a very good strategy for Tumblr, is to get somebody else to run it for you. Okay, and Scott?
Well, with Tights and Fights, it was a very sort of unique situation because our social media platforms were part of the story. And I would say, you know, like you have to kind of commit to the platform. So part of that is, you know, really think about how many you can do well, and whatever ones you decide to do, you really kind of have to commit to and dive into and live on. And I wouldn't overlook YouTube as your primary way of
I was just going to say that
people.
That's where, see, the catch is like to post a tweet or do a Facebook post, that's the easiest thing you can do because you type a sentence and you press enter, and that's the extent of your effort. But on YouTube, which, you know, like we have like 16,000 subscribers on YouTube, so that's and that's way more than we have on Facebook and Twitter combined, right? But that means I have to make a video. And I've done that where, like, I've like, you know, fortunately I'm an editor, so I edit together things, or sometimes I'll just throw up a quick graphic or whatever. But in order to communicate information that I think is really important, that I really want to communicate to the audience, I put up a video. And because YouTube is a social networking platform, I don't know if we always think of it that way.
Use the other features of YouTube? Because YouTube also, I mean, you can message your subscribers. You can go and find people who have like content and subscribe to them and leave them. I mean, you've done a lot of that, right? You did a lot of leaving comments.
We would do a lot of messages, but I don't think people really respond to messages on YouTube so much. But what we found, you know, you want to really let people know that you're talking with them and listening to them. So a lot of times we'll start a little conversation in the comments section, and it will sort of escalate to messages. And that's how you sort of, you know, you become more and more intimate with people. There's like a public part of the conversation, and then you start messaging back and forth, and they'll go and they'll look for your other platforms also to engage on.
You know what's interesting, though? You mentioned the word intimacy, and like that's one thing that's so cool about a web series, that you do have this intimate relationship with your audience that I doubt feature films and television can possibly have, because the audience knows that the person that's responding to the comments, let's say, they know that the person responding to that is the maker of the show. And I even actually started doing this thing where when people would ask a question, you know, sometimes it's as simple as when is the next episode. But when I respond to that, I actually say like, oh, you know, we're still fundraising, and we're looking forward to getting that to you. And then I'll just do dash Jason. And then they know it's coming from the guy whose name was in the credits. And what's fascinating, and this is crazy, but the audience has actually started responding to me by name, even though it's coming up as Ed with Dad, the YouTube user. They're saying, and I'm actually seeing other fans of the show responding to other comments where someone else might ask a question like, hey, Jason, did they raise enough money? And they say, oh, Jason said, you know, they've got everything except they don't have enough for post-production yet. And so that's pretty
great.
People
really expect that one-on-one when they watch your show online. They really expect that they're now like connected with you one-on-one.
Which, you know, if there's one thing that we kept saying earlier this evening is about how it's making a web series is so time-consuming, it's this part that is really sucking the life out of everything.
The social media.
Yeah. It's I don't want to call it social media. I mean, that's what it is. I like to call
the
it audience engagement.
The interaction with
the audience.
So when you first started, did you answer every comment?
Almost. I tried to. I still try to. I don't come near close. I mean, like, when we put out a new episode, you know, we get hundreds of comments a week, you know, and so there's no way you can keep up. But, you know, I do read every comment, and if I can think of a clever response, I will. Or if it's a genuine, like you know, well, sometimes it's simple, like you know, gosh, that music was really beautiful. Where can I get it? And I'll say, like, oh, well, that's by composer Adrian Ellis, and you know, I'll be sure to tell him that. And then I will tell Adrian, and then with his YouTube account, he responds saying, hey, thanks for the kind words, you know.
Okay.
So I think the goal is to respond to every comment.
Okay. Yeah.
We have another question from Janice. Have any of you allowed the audience to drive the storytelling?
I wouldn't say I've let them drive the actual storyline, but at the end of season one, the character Jenna that you saw in this episode, the end of season one, the last case of season one was to find Jenna. She'd gone missing. And we had such an amazing response from our fans to Jenna and George, that we asked Vanessa to come back for season two, because I originally had only written her into that one episode, and they found her, and that was that. But we had such an amazing response to her, because she's pretty hot. So we asked her to come back, and she was a major character in both season two and season three. She became a huge plot point. So they didn't necessarily dictate the story per se, but we absolutely listened to what they want. Yeah.
I had a similar experience where in the first couple episodes that we put out, everyone hated Vanessa, who Lindsay plays. And my concern was, because I knew that, you know, like Lindsay and I knew why she was being that way and all this kind of stuff. I was like, oh, no, but it's not going to be till like season two that they figure it out. Like, can I ask the audience to wait that long? So that's when we cooked up that episode four that we shot at the end. It's like, no, let's add more content and explain, like, why would Rose fall in love with her? So it was like a shortcoming in my writing that I got to fix. That was kind of cool. But in terms of dictating the story, I actually literally went to the audience and asked them to submit their stories. And because in my second season, episodes 207 and 208, please go watch, they go to a PFLAG Canada meeting. They go to a sharing meeting, Rose and Nathan. And so it's kind of like, you know, a sharing meeting where everyone sits in a circle and we all go around and listen to stories. And I just thought, you know, I don't know if I want to invent all these stories of, you know, homophobia or bullying or coming out, or, you know, like, let's find out experiences from the audience. So I asked the audience to submit their stories, and they submitted, I think, like 30, 40, 50 submissions. And I read them all and I found the right ones, the right tones and everything. And then I then cast actors accordingly, and basically, without altering the text very much at all, I gave them these monologues, and they performed these monologues, and that it was actually one of the most potent episodes, and I think a very, very, very well received one. People, you know, like today, I had three comments from people saying, "I just cried watching that. Is it okay if I cry?"
So yes, it's quick, okay, before we go to the next question, I see you. You can put your hand down. Scott, you want to just talk about how you interact with the audience on Twitter?
This is so cool.
I'm not sure I'll be so quick, but I kind of have two answers like I often do. But specifically for Tights and Fights, part of what we were doing was a whole transmedia storytelling. So there's 183 video diary episodes of the superheroes and supervillains. And between them, we would go on social media and social networks and improvise a story with the audience. So we actually, not only could people join in through Twitter and through other platforms, but we also had our own social media website called capester.com that people could actually join and create superheroes and supervillains, and anything that happened on that website, which was kind of like Facebook for superheroes, would happen within our story world. So between each episode that was already written and already shot, we would improvise these storylines and we would put a lot of effort into having the audience drive the stories and join the stories, but still steer them back so that when the next episode happened, it didn't contradict, you know, what was happening in the transmedia stuff. So that was a lot of fly by the seat of your pants storytelling, which was a lot of fun. But I would like to address, there's a certain thing where as soon as you get into doing online stuff and what's called digital, even though I think a lot of us don't really like that term for what we do, there's a certain thing of like, oh, you can make it interactive and you can have the audience tell you what happened next. And like I'm a storyteller, and what I want to do with my stuff is I want to surprise you, and I want to have twists and turns, and I want to get you to a point where things you didn't expect to happen or necessarily want to happen happen and are fulfilling, right? And I think that when you have interactive storytelling and choose your own adventure and stuff, you run the risk of people losing that sense of someone is telling you a story and you're the better for it. If you just think you're going into a story and then just clicking through and saying they kill each other, or they do this, or I don't think you have that same fulfillment as when you come to the end of a story and it's like, wow, like I was taken on a journey.
So the audience is a partner in many ways. They help distribute your show. They help promote it. They help finance it. Mm-hmm. But they're not your co-writer. Is that what we're saying? Okay.
Yeah.
Here's a, another question. Thanks. Okay, so the question is about post-production, and is it on Final Cut Pro? Do you use a post house? What extent do you guys go to post your shows?
I think we all do it ourselves, don't we?
Well, you know, I think we either there are shows that have more, you know, it's like either yourself or your friends, or, you know, you have a small budget to pay for stuff. But I think that most of the people who are really serious about their show are really super serious about post-production, partially because you can do it yourself at home, or you can get your friends to do it, but partially because, you know, I think a lot of people, when they think about making stuff, they think about the production, they think about the editing, but, like, what makes the difference, really, between something that people just feels a little bit off and is just looks really slick and amazing is color timing and is sound mixing and is a really well-thought-out soundscape, and I think that stuff... that a lot of Toronto web series people really stop and put time into is, like, all of our stuff is color timed. You know, all of our stuff is, like, we spend a lot of time on the mix and the sound mix and, you know, of course, the editing. And
I think it varies, too, the order of things, because I know some creators will not release a single episode until every episode has been mixed, scored, cut, and then they'll upload the first one. I actually didn't do it that way. I would sort of, I had 2 weeks between episodes, and I would get a rough cut of everything. That was more because at the launch party, I wanted to be able to show the cast what they'd done, right? And the crew what they'd done. And but then I would go and fine-tune between every week. But I'm actually not going to do that this time. I'm going to do it all in one go. And I'm an Adobe user, and because I do all my visual effects and color correction and all that stuff, and that's all done in After Effects. So, you know, Premiere and After Effects are best friends, and
Regan, what do you use? What software?
I'm an Apple Final Cut Pro and Final Cut Studio that has all kinds of different programs, including Color, I think it's called, where you can do color correction. And the thing is, with post production, all of the software is available to you all. And I know that not everyone has the skill set to make it happen, but what I've also found is if there's something you don't know but you really want to do it and really want to make a part of it, Google the problem, because no doubt someone else has had the same problem as you and they've posted in a forum.
Or ask the Toronto Web Series community forum. There's actually, every now and then, there's a post-production question and, you know, it gets...
It's amazing what you can do with After Effects, too.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's my favorite program to use.
Is it? Oh, yeah. Okay, go ahead.
Tori, what are your current budgets today for episode?
Episode budget.
Ah, I'm glad that you... Okay, but the exact wording of the question was, what is the cost per episode? And I find it interesting that so many people look at a web series as a episode by episode production. Whereas I think that I will get to answering your question. Sorry, just I'm on a tangent. One of the things that I think is often not acknowledged by feature filmmakers and television makers is that really a web series is much more akin to a feature film production, an indie feature, because our productions are really done by season, and so we're shooting all the stuff in one location for the whole season in, you know, however many days we get, and you know, and then in post it becomes episodic. It's a block shoot.
Most of them are like that.
Most, not all. Because, I mean, Tights and Fights wasn't exactly.
Oh, well, it was mostly block shooting.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. But just in blocks.
We shot three production blocks.
Oh, three big blocks. Okay. And, but I've just, you know, just the reason I'm bringing it up is because lately I've met some film producers that when I mentioned this, their eyes like, oh, that makes sense, what you said. But they just never thought of it that way. They just think, well, it's by episode because I know television, each episode is one production, right? But, you know, that would be nonsensical for us. It would cost too much, which brings us back to cost.
But your cost does not include a huge amount, which is, where did it say? It said written, directed, produced, edited by you.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I mean, you know, that's the thing. It's like, you know, for my first two seasons, like in terms of hard cash being spent, it was on catering because I was able to ask a cast and crew to volunteer their time. Locations were lent to us from, you know, small businesses and friends and family and all that kind of stuff lent us their homes. So, I mean, I'm sure there's a dollar value I could attach to that. I haven't done that. But I bet you I've spent like $1 million or two. I'm not actually not joking. I think that's probably what I've spent considering.
But most of it, like, you know, donated and in kind, not actual.
That's the
like,
thing.
Yeah,
you know, it was like $1,000 on catering, kind of thing. You know,
Regan, do you have a cost?
I definitely don't have per episode. That is kind of
What did you spend on your third season?
On our third season. We fundraised and got $2,500 on Indiegogo, and then we had some private funders as well. But it was absolutely block shooting, and our cast absolutely worked for free because they're fabulous people. And all of the production work and post-production work was me and was free. And
in
I
your
already,
spare time.
It's spare time. and I already had all the equipment, so there's a lot of ways to cut down on costs if you can. But mostly it went to food and transportation and things like parking tickets. What my rule was that I didn't want it to cost anyone involved to be involved. So I covered food, I covered transit, stuff like that. Parking tickets. We got them, and I paid them. Because I didn't want it to cost anyone, but it was a lot of favors, and it was a lot of, as you said, block shooting, because you can make one location into five different locations in five different episodes. So, and you try to do it in the quickest amount of time possible. Scott?
Well, for Tights and Fights, like I said, we got the IPF funding, so that was $150,000, which, although it sounds like a lot of money, and it is kind of a lot of money in the world of web series, like
a lot of money.
It really did not, you know, once you start spending money, you can just spend money till it's all gone, no matter what. So it was still, you know, although we put it all on the screen, I mean, it was still really like we had to really stretch a dime. But Jabu the Vampire and all of our other shows were done out of pocket they're all done for around $5,000, which is kind of the minimum hard costs if you're not just doing it through like favors. Because our thing is, how many people here have heard of deferrals, like crew and cast deferrals? Well, it's kind of an industry way of saying we're not going to pay you, right? And for our thing is we do want to make money. And so if you make it with deferrals and you start making money, well, then you'll never make enough money to make the next one. So our thing is we will pay you the most we can afford, which is almost nothing, but we will pay you the most we can afford now. And then if we do more, which is the goal, we will try to pay you more. And so when you're doing it like that, $5,000 is about the minimum that you can do for a couple of weekends shoot. But once again, like they're saying, we didn't really work on it at a per episode budget, because it doesn't really make sense to think of it like that in a web series context.
Can you talk about what you think the balance between marketing budget and episode budget is? Should be production.
I can talk about that. You know,
because I know what you think about it.
The thing about web series is that, you know, we come to it with these preconceived frameworks of, like, this is how movies are done and this is how television gets done. And web series aren't movies and they're not television. And there's so many moments where you're like, boom, like, I've been thinking about it wrong. And one of them, I think, is budgets. And I think we come into it, especially in Canada where it's deal-driven, we come into it with this idea that this is the money we have and so that's our production budget. And with web series, that's not true. Because with web series, you're not just making it and putting it in the can and then having a beer and talking about how, you know, other people ruined it. You're actually, like, you're actually out there ruining it yourself. You're actually out there, you know, you're putting it online and you're telling people to see it and you're buying advertising and you're going to festivals. And so I firmly believe that whatever money you have to do it, you should divide it into thirds. And the first third is your production budget. And the second third is your, like, corporate overheady budget. So you're running an office somewhere, you're paying your expenses, maybe you're paying yourself a little bit so you're not kicked out of your apartment. You're paying for insurance, all that kind of stuff. That sort of stuff that sustains not just the production but the whole venture. And the last third is your marketing budget. So all the stuff it takes to actually, you know, get people to see it.
Which would include, like, submissions to
festivals.
Absolutely,
yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, like, these are one of the things in that, like, you know, this, like I said, there's just so many times where you're like, oh, why was I approaching it like this? Because that's how it was done in other media in the past. Like release schedules, you know, most people when they do a web series, they think, I'm going to do it once a week. And it's like, why are you doing it once a week? Because that's how television has done it. Right?
Yeah, microwave porn, they just put out an episode whenever they... Because they actually did do it per episode. And
microwave porn is
microwave
what you said,
porn, yeah.
So that's another Toronto web series.
Which is
in
hilarious.
In case you were wondering why he's mentioning porn.
No, it's hilarious. It's about a guy whose roommate is a talking microwave who has an addiction to porn.
Yes.
It's that awesome. And it's hilariously...
And if you know anything about SEO...
Search engine optimization.
Porn is an excellent word to have in your title because it's a great search term. Anyway,
yeah.
Sorry. Talk about that.
But they would just put out an episode whenever they got around to it, you know, and because they would, you know, they'd find a weekend where they get to shoot the episode and then they'd put it up, you know, after a month of post or whatever. And the audience there, like, and they have built an audience, but, you know, they just wait till the next one was available, and that's when they put it up.
So, Jason, you say you're gonna post all your episodes before at the same time this season. Are you gonna release them all at once?
No. Oh, you know, I'm sort of flip flopping on that. I've been doing crowdsource funding model. I'm not using Indiegogo or Kickstarter. I built my own. And if you go to www.com/contribute, you'll see what I'm talking about. But I did the same thing. You know, you got your different tiers and all that kind of stuff. And one of the perks at $50 or more is that you get to see episodes 3 weeks early. And I know that that's enticing because our audience is always, like, they're ravenous for more. So I'm tapping into that and saying, all right, if you want to see it earlier, then pony up sort of thing. So I'm actually contemplating... maybe doing, like, a big release. This might be a nice venue. Screen all of the first chunk of season 3 in one go and maybe release those privately to those people that have donated right away and all in one go. So I'm thinking, like, the first 6 episodes, let's say, and then do a weekly or biweekly or whatever after that to the public 3 weeks later, so to speak. So I don't know. I'm experimenting. Let me know if you guys come up with a better idea.
How did you roll out?
We, back in the day, in season 1, we were given Tuesday as our time slot to post by After Ellen, the website. And then I just stuck to that because that's what our fans were used to. For season 3, my plan was to get all 5 episodes done before you start rolling them out. because it's like once you start rolling them out, you know that big boulder in Indiana Jones that comes down? That's what it's like. And then you're just
all day,
trying to keep up.
Every day.
Exactly. And
yeah,
you're just trying to keep
comments
up.
And comments in which, of course, you need to engage. And so where do you have the time to do your sound mix?
Yeah, then you're just trying to do everything at the same time. So it was my plan for season three, but that didn't work out. So I was just like working nonstop constantly to get that. On that schedule.
Do you think that episodes need to be rolled out one at a time? Is there a reason to not just
House
shove
of Cards
everything
did it
on there?
One go?
Yeah, well, so.
And I love that yeah. They did it all in one go.
I'm tempted to.
Did you watch them all in one go?
I watched it on my own schedule, but they were available to watch on my own schedule. That's the thing about rolling. I'm torn.
The thing is, like, there are those audience members that will wait until they're all out so that they can binge watch, right? And so
I think the key is there's no one right answer.
We're back to
and
no
I
rules.
I think you have to, and I'm going to circle around a tiny bit. Microwave Porn is a show that proves every single thing wrong. So every single thing we've said and every single thing that anyone will tell you have to do to make your web series a success, they do not do.
That's true.
And it's a success.
Yeah.
They have no website.
They don't engage their audience. They don't talk to people. They don't tell people the episode's coming. They don't do anything. They just put them
but
up.
They put porn.
And yet,
it's partially they have.
Yeah,
that
there's that.
Them.
But I mean, but that's a beautiful right though. And like they have hundreds of thousands of views.
They don't have a release strategy, like you were saying. They don't. They just work like, oh, let's do another episode, dudes. And they're like, okay, let's go do it. And they do it and they post it.
And it's not. It's not serialized.
It's not serialized.
It's
which
I
think
a little bit, but not really.
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 I think there's room for a really episodic series in web series. But I was going to say with release strategies, I think you have to really decide like what it is you want to get out of your web series and what your plans are for like monetization and marketing and create your release strategy around that. So if you know for certain goals, once a week, rolling them out once a time is smart. For other goals, putting them up all at once is more smart. You can put them up like in chunks, you know, like you were saying, like you put a big chunk and then do a bunch of little ones like Pete Winning. He did two at once, right, when you launched.
And incidentally, the entire season of Pete Winning is done, ready to go. And when did episode 3 go out, Pete? Mike?
That's coming out next Tuesday, actually.
Excellent.
Next Tuesday.
He uploaded tonight.
The thing I will say for rolling them out on a schedule, if social media is going to be one of your main marketing tools, it gives you a schedule on which to do that. Because if you do send out all of your episodes in one go, people are going to watch them and then they're kind of done with you. So if
you've got nothing to talk about.
You've got nothing to talk about. So if you keep them engaged with a release schedule.
Right, like Pironage. When Pironage, we should take more, but Pironage, when they put out a new episode, they would travel around North America and they would have this crazy huge event where like hundreds of thousands of people would show up and pay to show up and they'd release the next episode. So if they did it all at once.
Screen them in theaters.
In theaters. And they made a big to-do about it. And
longer you have between episodes, the more bigger you can make each release.
But you
release.
Need a fan base to start with.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
Let's have your question.
I was actually just wondering, as vets, how you feel funders of like the idea for doing it, understanding the media, and actually, you know, providing opportunities.
So how are funders like the IPF supporting the industry?
Actually, like, would you consider they're actually understanding?
Do they understand the medium? Now, you two haven't worked with the IPF. You have?
I think to start with, I mean, the fact that the IPF is doing this at all is a giant thing that they should be, like, we should fall on our knees for them to do it. Whatever anyone might think, the fact that they said to, like, their bosses, we're going to do this, and their bosses were like, what?
And they were TV bosses, weren't they?
It goes against...
They have a board. They're an independent... the Independent Production Fund is an equity financer run by a board. It's a private fund. So they are not run by the broadcasters.
It was a giant risk for Andrew at the IPF to convince people that this is something that needed to be supported. And, you know, the Independent Production Fund is also one of the reasons why this community has sort of grown up. I think that just in the nature of who they are and the fact that they're, you know, somewhat bureaucratic and used to working in sort of the television side of things, I think there's challenges for them to do the things that even they want to do. And I think they are learning super quickly about what works for them and what doesn't work for them. But, you know, I thank my lucky stars that I live in Toronto and have access to this opportunity.
I'm going to speak to this, too, because my web show has been financed by the IPF for two seasons. And I think that they've learned along with us, and they've learned different lessons than we have because they're creating and they learn their experiences are quite different. But what they have given us is this amazing head start. Mm-hmm. Launched a bunch of shows in a really great way, and they've been really fabulous about financing creators as opposed to companies. So, you know, Scott and I each, we didn't have big production companies or huge track records, but they invested in us, and they invested in Jeff and Davin, who were from Pure Ownage, who do Space Janitors now, and a bunch of other small independents. So
they're doing it for the sole reason that they want you to succeed. Like whatever else you might want to say, the only reason why this money is available is because Andra and a small group of people want you to do web series and to do really well.
Yeah. Yes. Cast. We are going to answer that question by saying this is a union space. We're supported by the Writers Guild of Canada, this event. We are pro-union, and we'll just leave it for there. Maybe we'll go to the bar later, and you'll get a different answer.
I think there's room for everyone to do anything that they want.
And I'm the president of the Writers Guild of Canada. So, okay, next question. Yes. What is success? Is it a number of views? Is it a certain number of views? I mean, I think we all define success differently. You have a thing about this, Scott.
Well, let's get a good bit about this.
It comes back to, I have a bit about everything. I talk too much. I think it really comes back to, like once again, like, what are you in it for? And how do you define your success? And if you're in it to, like, put something online and to be proud of it and to have people who like it, then what does it matter? I mean, you can decide for yourself an arbitrary number. I don't think in the industry there's any like arbitrary numbers where it's like you've reached this threshold and now you're a success. But once again, you can circle around to like, what are your goals? And if your goal is to, you know, win an awards, well, then the number of views that you get in isn't necessarily a good measure of you trying to achieve that, because you can imagine a situation where a show like, say, Microwave Porn that really engages with an audience and really builds views, they're not winning awards for the most part. They've got the cards.
But I don't think they've ever entered one either.
They've never entered one.
Well, and then there's a show like, what's the one that... it was nominated for a bunch of the ISA awards by Nate, the lesbian girl that comes home and travels around the U.S. It's a beautiful show, but it's getting like no views for some reason, and it's a crime because it's a beautiful show, but it's getting tons of awards, but no one's watching.
Well, because that's not where they're putting their energy, right, into building an audience. I mean, yeah. It takes a lot of energy to build an audience, as everyone's exhaustion here.
Well, can I just finish and say I would say be very, very, very careful in getting into it and judging your success by the number of views. Because, you know, I could talk about this all night, but, like, what does it matter? What does it matter if you get, like, a million views might be, like, a good sort of pat on the back, but, like, what does that translate into? Does that really further what you're trying to do with your career? So I'd just be very cautious about sort of falling into the television mindset of, like, you know, overnight ratings and your ratings. It's not necessarily a good measure of success. Maybe it is for you. Maybe that's the only reason you're getting into it and what you want, but I just... Okay.
Let's get this question. Good question.
I would say that not particularly. They're more concerned with recoupment. Number of views is a factor. They expect you to pay the money back.
But, I mean, they're an investor, so they want their money back. But I think they would take any of these kinds of successes that we've talked about, a strong audience, revenue, or awards. Yes.
I just you can negotiate that with them.
That's okay. Well, it's hard for us to answer questions about the IPF, what they're looking for. We can only talk about what our experience it has been with them. I've released two seasons that have been supported by the IPF. I haven't really sent them any money back. So,
but the folks that run the IPF office, they're very approachable, and ask them.
Other questions? Yes. Yes. Are web series a stepping stone to other mediums, or they're their own thing?
I think the answer is yes. For some people, that's exactly what they are, and then for other people, it is what it is. For me, it's I'm making a web series because I like the medium and I love it. That's where I want to be.
Regan, do you want to be in making TV or making web series?
I originally thought I wanted it to be a stepping stone to TV, but then when I was taking that step, I realized all of the benefits of the web, and I realized, no, I think I want the web to develop as its own medium, and I want it to be there.
So. I do want to make TV, but given the choice between doing a web series and doing a TV show and making the same amount of money, I would absolutely take a web series, like by far. And I think that there's a couple answers to that question, but I think the thing you kind of have to realize, maybe it's changing and maybe it's going to change more someday, but right now there's not really a sense of, especially in Canada, there's not a sense of, you did a really good web series, I'm going to give you a swing at doing a movie or a television show. Like, the people that do the movies and the television shows don't really think that way.
Like, no, I actually feel really looked down upon, even, like, to the point, like, I'll be at some networking event and they'll say, oh, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, I make an independent web series. And they're like, oh, that's good. Yeah, okay. See, yeah, thank you. Like, I've actually had that. I'm like, oh my God, this is happening in real life? I thought that only happened in movies, funny enough.
Are you guys creatively satisfied?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's the greatest thing that I've done.
Are you gonna make another show?
Yes. I actually have a show in development right now with my co-producer in the UK.
Right on.
Can you tell us about it? Can you announce it here?
No, I will not.
Can you tell us where to send our money?
To me.
Okay, are there some more questions? Anybody else got some questions here? Yes. Yes, it's you. Okay, so let's talk a little bit. The question is about metadata. So this is a question about tags, keywords, I think thumbnail images for your videos, stuff like that. Can you go into setting up a YouTube channel?
Yeah, it's something you're going to have to massage a little bit to figure out. When I uploaded the first episode of it with Dad, actually, no, it was when I uploaded the trailer, I think. I was looking at all the suggested videos down the side to my video, and it was a lot of, like, weird, trashy Lindsay Lohan videos. And I was like, I don't think that's the audience that wants to watch that with Dad. And so I started changing some of my language, and I was really futzing around with it until the things that were showing up actually were the things that I thought my audience would be interested in. And so there's a lot of experimenting, I would say, to figure out really what it is. But I do think thumbnails, and I feel so guilty telling this bit because I just feel so guilty. You'll understand why. Thumbnails are really important, and girls kissing very clearly in well-lit situations gets lots of hits. It does. And I kind of feel creepy saying that, but like, you know, it's true though. When, you know, whenever I've got these two kissing in a thumbnail, like those episodes have like 3 or 5 million views alone, and the other ones not as much. It's crazy.
Which comes around again to the idea of like, what's the value of view, right? Like you'll have those stats and you'll take those stats, well, but those aren't fans of your show.
That's right. And in fact, they're largely German men between the ages 35 and 45. sorry, Kate and Lindsay, they don't like being reminded of that. But you're right about, you know, because like those aren't the fans, but the fans, you know, going back to what the measure of success, I just want to chime in on that because I feel like Ed with Dad is a success because one of our goals was we wanted to make a show that is quirky and fun, but also has a take-home message that someone can get value from. And from the feedback that we've gotten from the audience, the comments, we know that we're doing that. Like, we're getting people saying, your show gave me the courage to come out to my parents last night. Thank you. And we've had other kids saying things like, you know, I started watching your show a year ago. It was a very bad time in my life. And I was considering ending it. And I'm still here today because of your show. And I get choked up every time I tell that story. But we get those comments on a regular basis. And that's okay. One of my measures of success.
Okay, but we're talking, going back to tags.
I went off topic.
You know, this bad segue around away from this, but back to tags. It's kind of easy to tag your show because you know you're looking for people who are coming out. But how do you guys tag your show when you're looking for audiences who are looking for entertainment?
I think it's really challenging, and I think that the way the internet works, and especially Google and YouTube and blogs and stuff, is set up for a certain type of content, and I think entertainment doesn't necessarily fall into that type of content. And I think that if you can imagine, if you were doing Of Mice and Men as a blog, how would you create that content to optimize it for Google? Because when we talk about search engines, we're talking about Google.
Yeah.
Like, how would you create that in order to people who are looking for...
You would have to say... You would have to... You would have to use headers and headlines and...
Does everyone know how like tags and stuff on YouTube work?
Subtitles work into the metadata as well. And that, by the way, also helps is having subtitles.
And that we used with English first. You close caption your show for English and then get subtitles in other languages as well.
Talk about view counts. The day we added Spanish subtitles was the day that we went from, you know, like 1,000 views a month to like 10,000 views a month. We've got like 8 languages now. Like, we're up to like 750,000 views a month now. And that's just because it's been spreading out like that. And I really have always thought that subtitles played a huge part. A lot of our comments are in Spanish and German and other languages.
Another thing you could spend all day...
All right. Yeah. So I guess that's tags and keywords. I don't know if we really answered that question. Other questions?
Oh, but you know what though? There is a resource to look at. YouTube has, I think they call
it Creator's Playbook.
The Creator's Playbook. It's a PDF that you can grab. It's easy to find. Google it. it's thick, but it's actually got some really good information. I remember I went through there, and it's got things in there like just what title to use on your YouTube video and just ways to optimize that, because they know that you need to optimize, and that's what a lot of the information in that the playbook. So definitely look that up. That's a great resource.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Okay, so how do you make your daylight money?
How do I live?
Yeah, if you moonlight as web series, what do you daylight as?
I have my own video production company, and I do a lot of corporate stuff and a lot of promo work and stuff like that.
I see myself as a writer and a creator, and so I see web series as part of my full time day job. I make a lot of my actual income. Web series outcome. a lot of my actual income to support web series writing cartoons and writing television, but I don't really see that as like my day job, and then I do web series because you know I spend as much time as possible every day, even though you know it may seem like I'm not putting anything online or anything. I spend a lot of time every day doing web series stuff, and I consider that my business, and I consider the freelance work that I do my side project.
It just happens that
the side project right now brings in more money.
You just made me realize I might actually have the same attitude. I didn't realize that till now. Don't tell my wife.
Well, don't get
my
us wrong.
My father-in-law's here.
Making,
don't tell her.
Making a web series is a full-time job.
It really
it's
is.
Absolutely a full-time job that you have to make work with your other work because it's not, maybe it will make you money. But at the moment, I don't know of anyone who is making their living off of making
there
web
are some
series
people.
As yet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think we have to take a last question. Do we have a last question? No last. Oh, yes. Okay, Carrie.
All right, come back to me.
Okay, Scott, do you have a favorite web series?
I have lots of web series that I really love. Bob and Andrew out of Vancouver is one of my favorites. I just love it. There's one that's called Co-op of the Damned, which is super funny. There's a bunch of them. I guess I'll stop there. Casual is an awesome LA love story web series. I will stop now.
Regan?
There's so many. And quite honestly, I don't know about you guys, but I don't have a lot of time to watch them as much as I would like to. Strangely, and I'm not saying this because she's sitting over there, but Ruby Sky is one of my favorite shows. I love the way that was done. But then I'm also a fan of the PI genre, so maybe that has a big part.
A lot of the shows I've brought up tonight are my favorite shows. Like Hitman 101, I think, is just a wicked shoot 'em up. I am a fan of everyone's work on this stage, that's for sure. I mentioned Anyone But Me. I'm a big fan of that. Yeah.
Oh, Space Hospital. Space Hospital.
And Space Janitors.
And Space Janitors.
So, okay, well, that's great. Thank you guys very much. Now, I think you're all really successful by my measures because, you know, you make great shows, you built audiences, but you've really taken your passion and made something in a new way and really blazed some trail. So thank you for sharing all the information with us.
Thank you. And thank you for coming, everyone.
Thank you, everyone. It's awesome.
Thanks for listening. If I'd been a better moderator, I would have gotten the panelists to give us the URLs for each of their web shows. But you can Google them. Out with Dad, BJ Fletcher, Private Eye, Tights and Fights, and coming soon, Job Review with a Vampire. Be sure to check them out, and many of the other web series you can find online. Writers Talking TV is brought to you by the Writers Guild of Canada. Our technical producer is Philip Vukovic, and I'm Jill Golick, reminding you that if you're writing a web series, let the story determine the length.